Well, hello there, and welcome to episode 8 of Be Boomer Unleashed. I'm your host, Jerry Lake, and I'm the unleashed baby boomer, if you will. And today we're going to start a two-part show. We can't get through the 80s, I don't think, in one part. There was just too much that happened there. So part one here, we're going to call it The Snowball Grows. The snowball grows. We've been talking about going down the slippery slope and opening Pandora's box in previous episodes, and how we've gone from very wholesome entertainment back in the 50s to what we have today. In the 80s, the decade of the 80s, there was a whole lot of current events that was going on there, and also media that kind of helped shape where we are today. Let me remind you where you can always find our podcast. We can always be found at beboomerunleashed.podbean.com. And on Facebook, iTunes, Spotify, Tumblr, Instagram, and Google Play at beboomerunleashed. That's all one word, at beboomerunleashed. You can find us on Twitter at beboomerunleash1. And why don't you drop us an email at beboomerunleashed@gmail.com. Let us know what you think of the podcast or any suggestions you might have for us. Like us on Facebook, follow us on iTunes or Google Play or whatever. We would appreciate it. Well, as we start this discussion of media in the 80s, before we do that, the reason we're going to take a couple of episodes to do this is we really can't talk about broadcast television and movies and talk about cable and satellite, which really came into their own in the 70s and 80s, all in one episode. So next week, we're going to primarily be talking about satellite and cable TV and what that has done to the media industry. My wife came across an article the other day and stated that children, by the time they're about 17 years old, will absorb about 60,000 hours of media. Now, that's not just TV. That's TV, movies, internet, Facebook. Anytime they're in front of a computer screen, I'd say we would call that being exposed to media. Now, 60,000 hours is a lot of hours. If you consider that in 24-hour days, those 17-year-olds, by the time they have consumed 60,000 hours, that's the equivalent of 6.8 years that they've sat in front of a screen of some sort. There's a big study that is going on about that now to see, study this group of children and see what it's done actually physiologically to their brain and to their eyes and a lot of things. And, you know, that study's way too early to see what the results might be, but it's kind of interesting to know that somebody's studying it. Now, if you look at that same 60,000 hours in 16-hour days, hopefully everybody maybe sleeps at least 8 hours a day. But if you look at those 60,000 hours in 16-hour days, that's about 10.2 years. So anywhere from 6 to 10 years by the time a person is 17 years old, they have sat in front of the computer screen or the TV screen for that long. So it has to have an effect. Has to have an effect, whether we like to believe that or not, it has to have an effect. Let's talk about some of the TV shows in the 80s, 1983 to 1987. You remember the A-Team and Hannibal and the Face and the Goofy Pilot, and you had Mr. T on there. These guys, the premise of that show, they were Vietnam vets accused and convicted of a crime they say they didn't commit. And then they became mercenaries engaging in illegal schemes. So these mercenaries who were prison escapees, although on the outside we all thought they were pretty good guys, but really they were mercenaries, soldiers of fortune, if you will, soldiers for hire, to engage in clandestine operations and illegal schemes. But we portrayed them as the good guys. So, entertaining show, but if you stop to think about the subliminal message there, it was these guys engaging in these illegal activities. Now, the interesting thing about A-Team, they probably fired a million rounds of ammunition during that series between 1983 and 1987, but I don't ever remember anybody getting killed. So from the violence standpoint, that wasn't too bad, I don't guess, but there was a lot of shooting going on. But once again, I don't think anybody ever died on that show. I don't know. Then in 1980 to 82, there was a show called Bosom Buddies. Do you remember that? Do you remember that show? Tom Hanks and Peter Scolari were struggling ad agency employees, and their apartment got condemned, and they got kicked out of their apartment, and the only apartment that they could find that they could afford was an all-female hotel, or an all-female apartment building, if you will. And so the only way they could get in there was to cross-dress. So they became cross-dressing guys, and they portrayed themselves as women and lived together in that apartment. And, of course, there was a lot of comedic situations that happened there. But here we have a look at cross-dressing and the thought that, well, that's perfectly normal. Once again, very subtle. Then in 1981 to 1988, we have Cagney and Lacey. You remember Cagney and Lacey? Two female police officers. They showed how tough they were in a predominantly male society or predominantly man's world. Now, I'm all for equal rights for women. Don't get me wrong there. I'm all for that. But this was portraying, at that time in the 80s, females in a very unconventional role as police officers. And I know some very fine female police officers. But these were not, they were females acting like men, really. And so there you have that little bit of identity there and stripping away that femininity, if you will, from the females and turning them into male. And that would, they could have called Cagney, you could have had a couple of guys playing Cagney and Lacey and done the same script for them, and there would have been absolutely no difference. But Cagney and Lacey were these two tough female police officers in a predominantly man's world, acting like men. 1976 to 81, we mentioned this briefly, Charlie's Angels. We talked a bit about that during the last episode. Once again, women in non-traditional roles. You had their handler, if you will, Bosley, who was kind of a bozo, the handler of these girls, the Angels, Charlie's Angels, and you never saw Charlie. But once again, three tough females in a predominantly male-oriented society. 1982, along comes Cheers. Everybody remember Cheers? Where everyone knows your name? Remember that? It was a story surrounding a bar and guys hanging out in a bar. And basically it was about a bunch of drunks hanging out. You know, every time Norm came in, everybody go, "Hey, Norm," you know. And he was there. And then you had Cliff, who was a disgruntled postal employee. And they were just hanging out, drinking, and talking about a lot of nothing. And then the bartender, Sam, he spent the most of his hours, most of his time, trying to have sex with one of the waitresses, Diane. And it was a story much about nothing. They tried to make that lifestyle in that program the norm, and no pun intended there on Norm the character. But they tried to make that the norm, where everybody knows your name, someplace you can go and feel comfortable and feel wanted and feel needed, and everybody knows your name. You know, we should be doing that in church. We should be getting to know people's names and making them feel welcome so they want to come and hang out with us instead of hanging out in a bar. Then along comes The Cosby Show in 1984. It ran until 1992. And that's a picture of an affluent African-American family. And say what you want about Bill Cosby, and I know he's been in the news a lot lately, and whether he did what they said or not, I guess the jury's out on that. But maybe he was a bad guy. Who knows? But they certainly crossed the color barriers in a very tasteful way. And most of the life lessons portrayed on that show were pretty solid. Pretty solid. But once again, you see a black family instead of a white family. It was during that time when integration and civil rights movement and all these things were going on. So we had a very affluent black family portrayed on this show. Not saying that's bad. I'm just saying that's the facts and the way it was. And it was a great show. I watched almost every episode, I guess, and I really enjoyed watching it. He was a doctor, I guess, and the kids were always having some kind of issues to deal with, and they were always dealt with in a tasteful way. So that was The Cosby Show. Then we mentioned this briefly last week. It started in the 70s and ran through 1991. Dallas and JR, all about debauchery, greed, sex, fornication. The list goes on. Then 1979 to 85, the Dukes of Hazzard. Yeehaw, Duke boys. And it was very entertaining. All the guys watched it to see Daisy Duke. As a matter of fact, they named shorts after her. They, you know, cut off blue jean shorts are called Daisy Dukes, I guess. But they portrayed rebellion as cool. You know, Bo and Luke Duke, they were cool guys. And they had prison records, but they were rebels, if you will, and they rebelled against the law. And that show portrayed rebels as cool, politicians as corrupt, and the police as blithering idiots. So we rooted for Bo and Luke, who were actually kind of punks, really. But they were portrayed on that show as the good guys. So there you have the Dukes of Hazzard making rebellion look cool. Then in 1982, we came up with Family Ties, ran 1982 through 1989, and a couple of baby boomer hippies. Remember them? They had a conservative son, Alex Keaton, who was played by Michael J. Fox. And once again, many times on that show, Alex was portrayed as the parent and his parents as these hippies that really didn't know the score. And of course, Alex was very conservative. He was a Republican and very conservative. I guess that's when the baby boomers really came of age, and it was pointed out that maybe some of the decisions they had made along the way weren't the right ones. So there was a big, a growing movement of conservatism, if you will, back in the 80s. And that show was just one of those that appealed to a more conservative audience, if you will. Then you had Growing Pains, 1985 to 1992, I think it was. You remember Alan Thicke, who was a stay-at-home psychiatrist dad. He was Mr. Dad, or Mr. Mom, if you will, and he moved his office into his den, and he met his patients there, and his wife, I think, was a journalist, and she went to work, and he stayed home. So we get a good look at a stay-at-home dad. Not important for Dad to get out and bring the bacon home now, because Mom, she can bring home the bacon and fry it up in the pan. She WOMAN, you know. How that advertisement went. I think it was for Virginia Slim cigarettes back in the day. But Growing Pains, a dad who was the stay-at-home mom. Then 1981 comes along Hill Street Blues, 1981 to 1987, and it was a cop show that had a variety of characters. Many of the scenes on Hill Street Blues and many of the episodes revolved around extramarital affairs and fornication. It was just a dirty-minded cop show, if you will. And once again, slipping down that slippery slope and letting that snowball roll down the hill, we were all sucked in, and we watched Hill Street Blues and the captain having an affair with the prosecuting attorney. And, you know, that's probably a conflict of interest somewhere, not only to mention the fact it was fornication and he shouldn't have been doing that kind of thing, but it made it all look very normal. And then 1979 to 1993, another evening soap opera, Knott's Landing, just another primetime soap opera, and it was all, you know, it was just a soap opera. What can I say? But it was in prime time. Why did these things move to prime time, you think? I think they moved to prime time because the baby boomers had come of age, and the baby boomer generation wanted to watch this kind of stuff. You know, that generation of the 60s and 70s, the hippies, the free love, the free sex, the drugs and everything. So Knott's Landing was a prime time soap opera that was appealing to some of those baby boomers. 1986 to 1994, we had L.A. Law. Remember that? And you had lawyers defending criminals and bending the law while they engaged in all types of sexual misbehavior. Just a bunch of lawyers acting badly, engaged in criminal activity and having affairs and committing fornication and all kinds of things. 77 to 86, The Love Boat. Love Boat, need I say more? We're not going to spend much time there. That was the Love Boat, what can I say? 87 to 97, of course, she had Married with Children, Al and Kate Bundy, and their dysfunctional family and their nasty kids. My, weren't their kids nasty? And it was family life at its worst. Family life at its worst, trying to make that kind of foolishness and sexual deviance and dishonesty and thievery look like the normal American family. And it's not. That's not the normal American family. Of course, I mean, it's not the family that I grew up in or that my kids grew up in. But Married with Children, 87 to 97, and it was just a bad family. Then in 1988 through 98, run 10 years, you got Murphy Brown. Everybody remember Murphy Brown? She was a feminist journalist. Now, Murphy's claim to fame, she was vulgar, conniving, opinionated, getting the story at any cost. I would say, arguably, we could call Murphy Brown the mother of fake news. And she was this feminist who was large and in charge, and she was liked making people's lives miserable. So, you know, bad behavior, once again, rewarded in Murphy Brown. So, long live Murphy Brown, I guess. But far cry from Father Knows Best or Leave It to Beaver, huh? Then in 1988 or 1987 to 1990, we had a sitcom called My Two Dads. My Two Dads. Remember that one? This little girl's mom dies, and the girl really doesn't know who her real dad is, but there were these two likely suspects, and so she lived with both of them, and the series ends without her ever knowing who her real dad was. Now, you remember back, some of you can't remember back that far, but in the 50s and 60s, did you ever know anyone who really didn't know who their dad was? I mean, that was rare. But this, you know, she was born into an era of free love and multiple sexual partners, and it certainly bears out in the fact that she didn't even know who her dad was, and probably her mom didn't even know who her dad was, and that is never revealed in that series as to who the girl's dad was. Once again, making the abnormal look normal. Then in 1976, to the end of the 70s through 81, The Muppet Show. The Muppet Show. Just nonsense. Empty-headed nonsense, The Muppet Show. 1988 through 1997, we have another vulgar woman, Roseanne. Another show about a vulgar woman and a dysfunctional family. These shows are making families, dysfunctional families, look like the fun way to be. And it's good to be normal. It's good to be obnoxious. It's good to be conniving. It's good to be irreverent. It's good. All these things are good, and that's what we hear on these shows through the 80s. Then in 1989, along comes a show called Seinfeld. Seinfeld. What in the world was Seinfeld about? It was about a bunch of neurotics doing absolutely nothing meaningful. You know, it was mildly entertaining. You had Jerry Seinfeld, and then you had Elaine and Kramer and George and all these people just doing ridiculous things, mindless things, that meant absolutely nothing. What did any of those people on that show do to contribute productively to society? Nothing. So it was a show about a bunch of neurotics doing nothing. That was the 80s, wasn't it? Then in 1977 to 1984, we had a show called Three's Company, where you had two gorgeous women and a goofy man living under one roof, platonically. Seriously? Seriously. So we've got, now it's normal for men and women to share an apartment. Oh, we're not having sex. We're not doing anything that we shouldn't be doing, but it's okay to share an apartment. Did you ever hear abstain from the appearance of evil? Or maybe, you know, if it looks like a duck and walks like a duck and quacks like a duck, it might be a duck. This show was just absurd. You had two gorgeous women and a goofy man living platonically under one roof. And that's supposed to be normal. That's supposed to be normal behavior. 84 through 92, and this is the last show we'll mention. There were a lot more, but Who's the Boss? Remember Who's the Boss? Tony Danza was the housekeeper for a professional woman. So we have a role reversal there, if you will, and we make that all look perfectly normal. Now, some of the events that shaped the 80s, remember in 1980 Winter Olympics, a miracle on ice, U.S. hockey defeats Russia and goes on to win a gold medal. Man, that was a great time, wasn't it? 1980, President Carter pulls our Olympic athletes out of the Summer Games. Remember the Summer Olympic boycott when we didn't go to Moscow? 1981, Ronald Reagan sworn in as president, and then just a few months later survives an assassination attempt. 1981, we also have the first space shuttle launch, and IBM launches their first PC. You remember that? Man, remember that? The first PC for IBM. And I had one of those early PCs from IBM. I also had my first computer that I owned was a Radio Shack TRS-80 called a Trash 80. And it had 48K RAM and 2 5-1/4-inch floppy disks, no hard disks. You had one floppy disk drive that you used as your program or your operating system. The other one you used as your program, you plugged the program in it and ran your program, and then when you had to back it up, you changed floppy disks in and out of the drive there. Wow. And it was pretty expensive, too, back in the day. So there were all these technological advances that were going on through the 80s. Sandra Day O'Connor was the first female Supreme Court justice in 1981, and in 1982, busing for the purpose of racial integration was eliminated. And remember all the busing that took place back in the late 60s and early 70s to achieve racial integration? That was eliminated in 1982. Then President Reagan introduces his Strategic Defense Initiative. Remember that? Star Wars? Where we weaponized space. Sally Ward becomes the first woman to travel in space about 1983. Then in 1983, there's a terrorist bomb. Killed 241 U.S. peacekeeping troops in Lebanon. Remember that? At the Beirut airport. Then a second bomb destroyed a French barracks 2 miles away, killing 43 there. Remember that? Then in 1984, this is history in the making, Walter Mondale. You remember him? He was a presidential candidate, and he ran against Reagan when Reagan was running for his second term, and he picks Geraldine Ferraro for his vice presidential running mate, and she was the first woman ever selected to do so. That happened in the 80s. That's pretty cool. Of course, Reagan was reelected by a landslide in 84. 85, Pete Rose. Pete Rose breaks Ty Cobb's all-time hitting record. Then, in 1986, we celebrated Martin Luther King Jr. Day for the first time. Martin Luther King Jr., we talked about him on the last episode. Great civil rights leader. And he was assassinated. And we celebrate MLK Jr. Day for the first time in 86. And also that year, the world watched as the Space Shuttle Challenger exploded after liftoff, killing all the folks on board, including the first teacher in space, Krista McAuliffe. Then in 1986, we had the Iran-Contra affair, where money was diverted from arms sales to fund Nicaraguan rebels. Then the stock market crash in 1987, lost 22.6% in one day, called it Black Monday. And then we had the first patent, 1988, for a genetically engineered animal. That was at Harvard University. And then in 1988, George H.W. Bush was elected president. And in 89, the Exxon Valdez crashes on a reef in Alaska, creating the largest oil spill in history. Now, those were tumultuous times in the 1980s. Tumultuous times, a lot of crazy things happening, and that snowball picks up speed going down that hill, and we're really going to talk about that snowball in part two of the 80s. The snowball gets bigger, the snowball increases, whatever you want to call it. But next week, we're going to talk primarily about satellite and cable TV. Now, cable TV, when it started in its infancy, It was actually called Community Antenna TV, or CATV, where communities got together, and TV reception might have been significantly hampered for one reason or another, and they would get together, and a company would erect a very large antenna that the whole community tapped into. So you didn't have antennas on all the houses around that you couldn't pick up, but they went back on a mountain, put up this giant antenna on a giant tower, and it was called Community Antenna TV, or CATV. But we're going to talk a little more about cable TV next week, about TBS, which changed the face of TV, Turner Broadcasting System, changed the face of TV and media forever, I guess. And then HBO, and we're going to talk about that and what that brought into your homes. And then the introduction of satellite TV that really grew in the 70s and 80s. We're going to be talking about that next week. Well, that's about all the time we have today, and I want to thank you again for being with us for this episode, but don't miss part two of this episode, because we're going to tie all these loose ends together of what happened in the 80s and the TV programming in the 80s, and we're going to tie that in with cable and satellite and show you just how big that snowball has gotten, and you don't want to miss that. Well, once again, thanks for being here. Have a great week, and God bless each and every one of you. Thanks.